through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Jake and Stacy. You guys, we have a special Wednesday edition of The Huddle, so you do not want to go anywhere. You're going to be glued to your radio to 710 ESPN Seattle all day. We've also got that playoff roundtable coming up later. So we do still have an hour of the Jake and Stacy show. And Jake, you brought up something that was very interesting to me because you're taking issue with the fear. I'm going to say the fear that some folks have. You want to explain it?
Yeah, I think that as I was getting ready to prep the show last night, Stacy, and sending in our show email, I came across an interesting soundbite, and I've also just seen this over the last couple days, the sentiment that John Wolford is all of a sudden the second coming for the Rams offense and is going to be the difference in this game. And I listened to cut number one here, Ryan Clark, talking about how he feels better about the Rams' chances to beat the Seahawks with Wolford now.
I'm a lot more confident in this team this week than I was before last week. I mean, we watched a game between John Wolford and Kyler Murray where he looked more Kyler Murray than Kyler Murray actually did, and that was impressive. But that was because of Sean McVay, because of the play calling, him understanding what the strengths and the positives were of this young quarterback, and they found ways to get him outside the pocket. He actually made some good throws from within the pocket. And so when you look at this defense, the way that this team is coached, and Wolford's ability to make some plays with his legs, I'm confident that the Rams could win this football game.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there, Stacy. First of all, he looked more like Kyler Murray than Kyler Murray. How about the fact that Kyler Murray had a leg injury going into that game, and he actually came out due to that leg injury and came back in? What in the world are we talking about?
We're talking about future Hall of Famer John Wolford, Jake.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. I should put some more respect on his name. I apologize. But what I do believe, though, in terms of what Ryan Clark was saying, is I believe that the Rams' offense is more dynamic in terms of making the Seahawks defend more than what Jared Goff presents at QB. Here's Pete Carroll in cut number three talking about his evaluation of Wolford when he watched the game last week versus the Cardinals.
He had a really good game, and to bounce back from his first throw he makes, you know, gets picked off, and he bounced right back and had a really winning football game, and I'm sure they're just really excited about it. And they didn't protect him to, you know, be safe with him at all. He threw the ball over the yard and made some big throws down the field and spread the formations and all that. It was really impressive. He ran well too, and so I can see that if that's the way they're going, that they would have a high level of excitement about, you know, his ability to throw together another good game. So he did really well.
So Pete Carroll hyping up John Wolford, and I watched the film of John Wolford. I thought he did a good job in the role that he was presented in, coming in as the backup quarterback in this game against another backup quarterback for the Cardinals. You didn't need to do a whole lot to win the game. You led four field goal drives. Interception helps you get a very cheap, easy field position. They, again, have to settle for a field goal. But other than that, Wolford did his job to help win them the game. But I'm sorry. Acting like John Wolford is going to be the difference in this matchup is hard for me to listen to. The Seahawks should be more respected than this, Stacy. This tells me two things, and we'll probably get to number two tomorrow. We'll probably save two tomorrow. But number one, which is more pressing, is people do not buy that this defense is capable of putting together another dominant defensive performance. That John Wolford is going to give them something that the Seahawks will not be prepared for. The problem is that with backup quarterbacks like this, who haven't played often or are never going to play often because they're not true starting quarterbacks in this league, is that when an opponent has an opportunity to see on film what you're capable of and what you're doing, all the element of surprise is gone. That's John Wolford and the Rams' best weapon. Their biggest secret is hiding the fact that Wolford could actually run. And here's Ken Norton Jr. in cut number two talking about what he saw from Wolford and how it isn't all that different.
Well, the similarities are the running a very similar offense, same play caller. I think that with we saw last week with Wolford, he's a little bit more mobile. He's a more apt to run the ball than Goff. But at the same time, same play caller. He's got a strong arm. He makes all the throws, and he can win football games. And he stands back there, and we have respect for him.
Okay, you have respect for him. He's back there. He's not Shreveler from the Arizona Cardinals. This guy can play a little
Great
bit. Okay, so we have to respect him. But John Wolford is not somebody that has me shaking in my boots. If I truly believe that this defense is for real, if I truly believe that the Seahawks can dominate the line of scrimmage like they did the last time around when they played Jared Goff in this offense, that they have the ability, which they're leading the league in sacks, Stacey, over the last 8 to 7 weeks, mm-hmm. They don't all of a sudden have the ability to fluster the great John Wolford. Give me a break.
Now, Jake, I was fully expecting this conversation to happen. I'm not kidding. I'm not being facetious. I know I often am. I was expecting this conversation, this doubt about the Seahawks defense to be happening. I was not expecting it against the Rams offense and John Wolford. I knew that this would be coming. And guess what? If the Seahawks should be lucky enough to advance, just like any team in any round of the playoffs should be lucky enough to advance, this conversation about can the Seahawks defense hold up to a legit quarterback will be one that is talked about when you face the Saints, when you face in whatever situation you might ever face the Buccaneers, should you face the Green Bay Packers. It's a conversation that will happen. What doesn't really mm-hmm. fit that narrative,
yes.
though, is the idea that John Wolford is suddenly going to be one of the guys that'll test you. He'll get his passes in. Like, it'll happen. Sean McVay is a great offensive mind. The Rams have good weapons. They will most likely have Cooper Kupp back, who's their leading receiver. They'll have Cam Akers out there, who has been great for them. He was not there last time these two teams faced off. But, Jake, when I look at Wolford's, what I personally felt was his best drive was in the second quarter. It wasn't his best individual play or pass. I thought he had other moments. But there was a second quarter drive that the Rams positioned themselves in. 12 plays gets them down to the Arizona 2-yard line. And it's not Cam Akers or the run game that gets them down there. It is just Wolford connecting with his receivers, primarily Reynolds. It's Wolford and Reynolds in the driver's seat moving down the field against the Arizona Cardinals. They get to the 2-yard line, and what happens? Cam Akers fumbles the ball because the Rams have not been a good team in the red zone. They are 19th in the red zone. That's without mm-hmm. Wolford there, much less with him there. This is an offense that isn't the offense they were in 2018, and I'm not entirely sure why people are suddenly using this game, this offense, an offense that I feel is one of the three weakest offenses in the postseason, using them as an example of a team that's going to suddenly prove that the defensive turnaround for Seattle is all a mirage.
Yeah, and that part of it to me, Stacey, is the biggest aspect of what you pointed out, is that this Rams offense isn't the offense that we've seen over the last couple seasons, the dominant, powerful, high-scoring offense that they've been in the past. They have really struggled this season, and when you talk about what the Seahawks were able to do, they were able to essentially have a complete beat on what the Rams were doing, their tendencies, the looks that they have. They shut down what Sean McVay wanted to do the most and what he likes to do the most, and that is to be able to run the football and be able to play action pass and get naked bootlegs, get cheap, easy completions out on the edge. The Seahawks defense shut that all down. And so if you're telling me that the Seahawks can do that again and the game is on John Wolford, that all of a sudden that we should be fearful of that? You should respect him and don't come out flat and don't come out expecting just because you have that logo, that Seahawks logo on your helmet, that you're going to come out and dominate and win that game. You can't take it for granted. I don't expect this defense to, not with the playoffs on the line, not with the chance to go chase the Super Bowl. So I am not fearful of John Wolford in his first ever playoff action going and beating this defense at home. To me, that to me is unacceptable. And if that did happen, it would be nuclear on Monday. It would be it would be a major, major problem. And the only way that this happens, Stacey, is just a lack of discipline from this defense. And what we have seen over the last 5 weeks in particular is this defense become more disciplined than they ever have in quite some time. They haven't been this disciplined on defense, Stacey, since the Legion of Boom era. It's truly that good. Not to the same level as those guys, but it is in par with what those guys were doing from a fundamental discipline standpoint. I don't see that changing.
But I think it's because of that monumental turnaround that people are questioning whether or not it's legit. I think that the fear people have is if I see something I haven't seen many times before, then I'm worrying if it is real. And I think that seeing that in sports where you lean a lot on statistics and when most things are fairly predictable, you know, like a team that's bad the year prior is going to probably be bad the next year unless they make substantial changes. A team that is horrific on defense in the first half of the season probably isn't going to be the best defense in the second half of the season. I'm not saying Seattle is the best defense overall, but that kind of turnaround is rare. So I think that that is one factor that people are doubting it. And so I don't blame people for doubting it, especially when that turnaround coincides with a stretch of poor quarterback play.
Go ahead and doubt it versus Drew Brees and the Saints offense and Alvin Kamara. Doubt it versus Aaron Rodgers.
I will be one of those
Not
people.
John Wolford.
I'm going to be one of those
Rams.
People. Should the Seahawks advance? Should they play the Packers? I will be one of the people saying the Packers are the second best offense in the postseason in both conferences right now. They are scoring the most points of any team. Aaron Rodgers is the MVP of the league. He has protected the football while also throwing for the most touchdowns in the NFL. This is going to be a problem. I'm not thinking that against Wolford. I think because Goff has been so wildly inconsistent, kind of Jekyll and Hyde this year, people are thinking, like, in Seattle, we're usually down on Jared Goff. People are thinking, well, maybe Wolford's the answer here. And during the huddle, we'll be able to talk to – do we have Lindsay Theory today on ESPN? So she'll be joining us for an opponent preview. We'll be able to ask her about that. But Wolford being the answer, I mean, that just – it doesn't check out with me. I think people are looking for an upset for a couple reasons, Jake. Number one – a defensive turnaround, like I said, that is that stellar is hard to believe. Number two, this is the same thing the Browns are going to face, even though they are a much worse team. People have a hard time thinking you can beat the same team in such a short span of time. I think people are more want to believe that you'll split a series or that they'll get the better of you. It's just it seems like a very difficult feat to beat the same team in such a short period of time. And then the third thing is that the Seahawks, within games, and we have to admit this to ourselves, can be really unpredictable. They can be a very unpredictable team.
Yes, they can.
The irony of that is that they are one of the most predictable teams when it comes to final season records, overall play of Russell Wilson, and unfortunately for us, we talk about this every year, about how far they get in the playoffs. It is unfortunately kind of predictable, but as far as individual games go, it is a roller coaster, more so than I think any other team.
That is very true. They are a roller coaster of a team. They always find a way to get your blood pumping, and not necessarily in the best of ways at times. But to me, as the 509 said, yes, the hype train, we played hype train yesterday. Mm-hmm. Let that John Wolford hype train just
go
roll
on
by.
No one's on it.
No one's going to hop on this, and anybody that does, you are getting on a train that is going to crash because this defense is too good. What they've been able to accomplish is too good, and saying so to me, it discredits, or you're trying to discredit what this defense has done over the last 8 to 7 weeks of the season. I'm not buying it. The other thing that I will say will be a key is not allowing John Wolford to get out on some of these quarterback design runs, not allowing him to use his legs, because that's a form of a way a quarterback sometimes, if you're uncomfortable, get comfortable and get into a rhythm, and have somebody that's struggling and never been in a playoff game, that's the way that you can maybe start to move the ball down the field and have somebody that shouldn't beat you. And so if the Seahawks are able to find a plan and put together an effective plan to be able to limit that and make John Wolford consistently sit in the pocket and try to beat you from the pocket with pressure and the way that this group has been able to pressure the quarterback, I love our defense's chances. I love the Seahawks defense's chances of holding the Rams under 10 points yet again.
It's 11:15, which means it's time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
What's the dumbest question you could ask? What?
Question one. Believe it or not, there's actually a national championship game next weekend.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Doesn't sound so good right now, though, as Ohio State reportedly having trouble with COVID test results, so the national championship game is in doubt. Should the game be postponed, or has the NCAA reached a point of no return?
Yeah, it should be postponed, depending on how big or how big of the issue is. Obviously, I don't know the level of ability Ohio State and Alabama's abilities to do contact tracing and to effectively be able to limit the spread within their team. If it's just one or two players and everybody else is fine, I think that then you should go ahead and play the game. You shouldn't, even if it's a star player. That's just the way that this thing goes, unfortunately. But if there is a bigger outbreak, I think that you do give Ohio State a chance to be able to get this thing turned around and hopefully that you do have a game. This is a national championship that we're talking about. You know, people want to see this matchup between Ohio State and Alabama. And they're also, not to mention, it's not like the NCAA is running a charity here. There's a lot of money on the line that they would gladly take with a championship game. So I think that they'll do whatever they can to hold this championship game, even if it means delaying it at, another week.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is the money you get from stuff like this is second only to March Madness, which is really where they get a lot of the money for the NCAA. So this is something that they have every bit of incentive in the world to keep going. Not to mention the teams involved are obviously like legacy teams that they always kind of depend on for fan bases. So I expect it to happen. Even if it's postponed, I would think it's just the 10 days they would need to get through whatever clearance. So you postpone it to like the 18th or whatever it is. College football was such a mistake this year. I don't blame people for trying. I was one of them saying like, maybe the Pac-12 should do this. What are we doing getting out of this? In retrospect, it was such a mess. It was a mess.
Number two.
Whose potential absence on Saturday would have a bigger impact? Jamal Adams or Jared Goff?
Hmm.
I have my answer.
The biggest player who has the biggest impact to me is going to be Jamal Adams. I really do think that when you talk about Jared Goff and the way that he has played this season, I really think that it really wouldn't matter if it was John Wolford or Jared Goff back there. I do think Jamal Adams, him not being out on the field, eliminates a massive playmaker for you. He is arguably your best defensive player. And really, I don't even think it's an argue. He is your best defensive player for the Seattle Seahawks. And he has been able to affect all three aspects of your defense. Pass coverage, run defense, and your pass rush. No doubt it would be a bigger impact for Jamal Adams to not be on the field for the Seahawks.
Jamal Adams is one of the very best players in the league and on your team, and you will need him if you want to win a Super Bowl. I think the Seahawks need Jamal Adams on the field to win a Super Bowl. But this Saturday, I think the more impactful absence would be Jared Goff. I think that people are being a little too quick to equate the performance level and ability and skill of Jared Goff and John Wolford. I think Wolford looked more mobile than Goff out there. He made a couple nice throws, and I'll give him that. I mean, he made some nice throws out there, but Jared Goff is a better quarterback. And if he is close to being healthy enough to play, the Rams will put him out there.
Number three.
Between the Rams and the Seahawks, which player or coach has the most at stake on Saturday?
Ooh. This is a really good question. I believe it's the Seahawks. The Rams, to me, what they were able to do, I think for Sean McVay, although it will be disappointing to not capitalize on a defense like they had this year and the success that they had this year. Preseason, the Rams were kind of an afterthought. You looked at this roster and said, I don't think that this team is going to be really any good, that they're going to, you know, compete for maybe the second place in the NFC West. But outside of that, their roster, their cap space, everything was just in shambles. So I think the Rams getting to this point, I think, is a victory for them. For the Seahawks, there is much bigger expectations on this franchise. When you have Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, you traded for Jamal Adams, two first-round picks. It is Super Bowl. That is the conversation in this town. With the Rams, not so much.
Yeah, Jake, I agree with you on that one. I think that the minimum for many, many Seahawks fans this year is get back to an NFC championship. You won the division for the first time in several years, or since 2016. You got to 12-4 for the first time since your last trip to the Super Bowl. You need to get back to an NFC championship game for also the first time since your last trip to the Super Bowl. It has been many years since you've done that, and it's you kind of create a reservoir of stuff that people can dip into. It's like Doug Peterson. When you win a Super Bowl with Philadelphia, you get a little bit of time to mess up before you run out of time. Sean McVay, not that long ago, constructed one of the best offenses we've seen in recent times in the NFL. He got to a Super Bowl. It was a subpar performance. People were disappointed. Rams fans were disappointed. But they've still got a ton of stars that people are excited about. Aaron Donald isn't going anywhere. Jalen Ramsey isn't going anywhere. And so I think with the Seahawks, they have been successful for so long that the double-edged sword, the other side of that, is that the bar for how far you can go raises every single year. I mean, I'm sure there are people somewhere that will be disappointed if they lose in the championship round and don't go to a Super Bowl. So the expectation is just so much higher, and the fan base, I think, just a little bit louder. As a reminder, you guys, don't miss the Seahawks playoff roundtable today from 3 to 4 p.m. on Wyman and Bob. Every weekday during the playoffs, Dave Wyman and Bob Steltner joined by a cast of our NFL experts with an inside look at the Hawks. The Seahawks playoff roundtable daily 3 to 4 p.m. on the home of the Seahawks playoff run, 710 ESPN Seattle. Guess who's on it today, Jake?
Who?
That's right. It's your girl on the Seahawks playoff roundtable. Mm-hmm.
Let's go.
Yeah, I'm going to be spending a lot of time with Dave Wyman today. Hopefully he won't be sick of me by the time we get to our third hour of
strong
Seahawks
possibility.
Talk. I think it's a very strong
He gets sick of everyone.
Literally everyone. All right. Normally, Mike Salk joins us at 11:30. He is, however, out today. So we have a special guest. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Now, normally at 11:30 every day on Jake and Stacey, we have Mike Salk joining us. Today, though, we have the Graz, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hey, Graz, how are you?
Hi, guys. How's it going today?
Good, good. We didn't get a chance to talk to you yesterday. We had Mike on, so I want to make sure to talk to you just while we have you about Baseball America's ranking. They looked at the Mariners farm system. They had Julio Rodriguez ahead of Jared Kelnick. So here's the question we were debating. Who are you personally more excited to see debut?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I think I'm... Boy, that's a great question. I'll just say Rodriguez.
That's a good answer. That's what I said.
That's a tough one, though, because I'm looking forward to seeing both of them. But he's the physical specimen, you know, playing shortstop. I'm really curious to see what he can do.
Yeah, Curtis asked me and Jake yesterday. We had a hard time choosing.
Yeah, I said Kelnick, Graz, and part of the reason why I said Kelnick is just because I think that he brings this, you know, bulldog, you know, fierce personality that I think would be great for that clubhouse. And you know, with the clubhouse that is developing a winning culture, I believe that he kind of brings the right amount of stuff, if you catch my drift, that just, you know, really, I think will be helpful for this ball club. But overall, Graz, how impressive has it been able to watch Jerry DePoto and this organization be able to turn their farmhouse, their farm system around, their farmhouse, their farm system around so quickly?
It's been impressive, and you know, now it's the next step. I mean, we've talked about it before with the Mariners. It's two things. It's getting the prospects, but it's developing the prospects. I mean, there has been one of those two aspects, and I'm not sure which one of them has been missing over the past decade or so. So we're into the developmental part now. And it's going to be very interesting to see, especially next year when you're going to have more of those guys come up, to see this happen. And this really hasn't happened for the Mariners in 20 years, where you've had an infusion of young players, where you're really looking forward to guys coming up. I mean, you can go back to Alex Rodriguez, you know, when he was 18, 19 years old. So it's been a long, long time since the Mariners have had a crew of prospects to bring up. And as long as they're being developed right, and it sounds like they are, it's going to be a fun year, I think. And I think it's a year that they can contend.
Well, and hanging on to those prospects, right? Deciding to stick to their guns,
right.
Jerry DePoto, stick to their guns and look ahead at the future instead of trying to win something now, try to win long-term. So I think you've seen a big effort with that, and that's reflected in the farm system too. Looking at the Beastquake was 10 years ago this week, Groz. You are the best with this. I know they have Groz story time. I got to ask, just can you take us through your own memories of that day?
You know, it was, I didn't think they had a chance, and I don't think I was alone. And I actually, I did go to the game and sat in the press box for it. And the immediate memory is first off, Matt Hasselbeck was having this fantastic game. I mean, he had a bad hip and didn't play the week before, and Charlie Whitehurst played, and they didn't even know if he was going to play during the week, and you didn't expect him to be able to do much, but he did. You know, the Saints were good, but they were a little disappointed to be a wild card. They were off the Super Bowl, and you knew you were going to have to score a lot of points, and you knew you were going to give up a lot of points. And they went down 10-0, and I think I felt like, well, that was that. And they just hung around, and then all of a sudden had this great run. And Hasselbeck really, John was it John Carlson, the tight end, who caught a couple of touchdown passes? And he hit another guy who I'm spacing on now, but he hit another big pass in the game. And they had this two-touchdown lead towards the end of the fourth quarter. And then when that Beastquake run happened, you know, all the windows were closed in the box, and it was easily the loudest moment, you know, anyone could actually imagine. I mean, the place was literally shaking. I think everyone was in disbelief. Everyone watching, everyone in the media, you know, you're trying to be restrained, and the newspaper guys were always better than that than the rest of us were. It was just hard not to just be completely overwhelmed by what was the greatest running play I've ever seen.
And what that running play sparked, Groz, I think has been amazing to watch and unfold, and here we are 11 years later watching this team again get into the playoffs. What in your mind, as you watch that, from that Beastquake moment to watching how that transitioned this franchise, what really stands out to you?
I think in retrospect, Jake, it's exactly what you said. It felt like the moment that even though there was, you know, Tavares Jackson to come and Russell Wilson wasn't immediately there and you didn't know exactly where you were going, it was just a spectacular moment to have happen. I mean, you'd had a 5-10 season or a 5-11 season the year before. You know, you were only 7-9, and Marshawn Lynch was kind of a curious pick. I mean, people knew him because of Cal, of course, and seen him play, but he hadn't done particularly well in Buffalo. He had looked good with the Seahawks, but you know, not like that. I mean, he had all these. We remember talking on the air at the time about all these great 2-yard runs he had, and how he always was able to break the first tackle. But you know, that moment, I think, really, you know, in retrospect, it propelled the entire Pete Carroll system, which they want to play this weekend. I mean, which is 10 years later is still what they want to do, and that's have a physical, powerful running game and win the fourth quarter. And boy, it just in thinking about it, it was such an amazing moment and such an incredible, exciting thing for everyone to be a part of. Just so unexpected. You know, 3.5 minutes to go, the Saints had come back. You know, it felt like, wow, they played this great game, but at the end of the day, they're not going to be able to get it. They're not going to be able to get a first down here. And then to have that play happen, just it felt like it changed the entire the entire feeling about the organization.
It absolutely, I loved the way you described to taking people into the press box, because I feel like that's something that's hard to explain, is when you're in the press box, it's technically a working area, like an office, and so everyone has to be really quiet, everyone's typing, and individual things that happen on the field, like a tackle, a touchdown, there's no cheering, there's not a ton of noise. People might say, wow, or what just happened, or did you see that, who got hurt, but otherwise there's not a lot. But there are certain plays, and I would imagine this, I wasn't there for this, I wasn't covering at the time, but I would imagine that this was one of those plays that are the rare ones I've seen when you forget the people in the press box are people whose lives are football, and there are certain moments that just leave them in awe, and they forget where they are, and they forget that it's your professional. You're not cheering, you're not screaming, you're just truly in awe of what you're seeing, and that moment is even more like transcendent. It's just, it's the best football plays, I think.
Describe it exactly, and I mean, it was a lot of looking around at each other, you know.
Yeah,
a lot of noises
happen?
Being, yeah, there are a lot of noises being made. I mean, you heard a physical reaction when he threw that guy down with the stiff arm.
Yeah,
you knew it was, oh my God, this is not happening. You know, it was one of the most surprising, incredible plays I've ever seen. And like I said, I mean, I don't think there's been a better running play in NFL history.
Yeah, Graz. When it comes to this matchup, one of the things that we have heard in terms of the Seahawks and Rams is that John Wolford, their backup quarterback, is all of a sudden going to really take off, and he could be the big difference in this game. Are you buying that?
No, I'm not. But I'll tell you this much: he doesn't have to be necessarily the big difference in this game. I mean, this is going to be, in my opinion, I mean, it's a divisional slugfest. Those are tough games. We saw it last week with San Francisco. Doesn't matter what the records are; it's the third time around. Unless he turns the ball over a lot, the Rams have got a great defense. I mean, they are. You know, I heard you guys talk in the last segment about their offense, and you're right; it's not at all like it used to be. But neither is their defense. I mean, they're a completely different outfit, and we have seen what great defenses can do in the postseason. If they can, and they've been able to score on defense, if the Rams can score on defense and hold the Seahawks to a touchdown or so, I mean, they can win a 14-10, a 17-13 game. And I think the Seahawks offense, I don't know why it would be any different this time around. They're going to struggle. They've always struggled with the Rams. The Rams, while definitely lacking a quarterback, or bringing a bunch of guys back. I mean, Whitworth may be playing. Brockers may be playing. They're going to be in better shape than they were a couple of weeks ago. So I think it's going to be a slugfest. I mean, I think this is a tough game. But, no, I do not see the backup quarterback all of a sudden throwing for 300 yards and four touchdowns in this game.
A great conversation, as always. He is the Graz. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
All right, we know DK Metcalf takes smack talk personally, so wait until you hear what one Rams player had to say the other day. Don't go anywhere. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
As a reminder, you guys, if you missed the show, don't forget you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app, powered by Dubin Law Group. We've also got articles, news, scores. You can listen to podcasts on there also, and interviews. It's awesome. Now, one thing that is not uncommon at all ahead of any game, most especially not, though, against rivalry games, playoff games, divisional games, is good old-fashioned smack talk. And guess what? There's been plenty being dished out ahead of this game. Now, two comments. I'm going to say one is bulletin board material. The other is fairly some smack talk. Both coming from the Rams, though, Jake. So we'll get started with one we've already heard. This was Aaron Donald right after the Rams win over the Cardinals in Cut 11.
You'll play the Seahawks in the first round of the playoffs.
That's what we wanted. That's exactly what we wanted.
Exactly what they wanted, Jake. They want to face the Seahawks. They want to seek some vengeance after that loss the Seahawks just recently dealt them.
Yeah, you know, it is something to me that as I hear Aaron Donald say that, I am excited for this matchup. And, you know, the Rams are talking quite a bit for a team that lost 20-9. Obviously, they feel like they can come back and avenge themselves from that loss. But here in cut number 10, you got John Johnson also talking about how he's upset that DK Metcalf moved around, and apparently he's trying to hide from Jalen Ramsey.
It seemed like last game they moved DK around a lot to Seattle. How did they use him differently last game compared to the other game?
Right. I don't know exactly what they're trying to do. Only thing that I could tell you is I feel like they were just trying to hide him from Jalen. That's the best that I can say about it. I mean, but we adjusted to it. I think we still did a pretty solid job. And now that we're aware of what they're doing, they did it in the Week 17 game as well. So we got a good feel for it, and we'll adjust to it.
Mm, interesting. So the other part of this is that, you know, he went on further to talk about how, you know, it made Jalen Ramsey mad and upset. And, you know, just so everybody else knows, you shouldn't game plan. Brian Schottenheimer, you have been put on notice. You're not allowed to motion DK Metcalf.
Absolutely
you're not allowed
not.
To, you know, play the game and use your strengths to attack their weaknesses. So, you know, as long as we got that understanding, then we can play the matchup that the Rams want to play. We can play the game that they want to play, and that it's not unfair, Stacey.
Now, I see that. What I raise you is that I do want to see DK Metcalf just outright beat Jalen Ramsey for a 50-50 go ball. Like, that's I understand pitting DK in the slot and taking advantage of some mismatches. What I want is for that comment to come back and bite the Rams. Like, what I want is for them to say, you don't want to make Jalen angry, for DK to catch that ball, get a touchdown, and turn to him and say, sorry, you're angry. Like, that's what I want. I want that version of DK Metcalf. So, I actually, Jake, I want to make sure I give him some bulletin board material, too. Just, I think that it's important. We
oh,
know
really?
DK Metcalf.
You want to jump,
we know
you want to jump in on this?
I do. Okay. We know DK Metcalf takes things personally, even compliments from coaches. We know that DK Metcalf is a great player. So first, I wanted to just recommend for reading purposes this now infamous article from Bleacher Report ahead of the 2019 draft titled All Sizzle, No Steak. DK Metcalf is a first round flop waiting to happen, Jake, in which our writer here says that the team that uses a high pick of Metcalf will rue that decision. He's big and strong and fast in a straight line, but it's far from everything that goes into being a star receiver. And he's sorely lacking in a number of areas just as important to a wideout success like the three-cone drill. So they didn't add that. I added that. But, you know, I think that it's important that DK just maybe know, you know, but maybe he doesn't have what it takes. Maybe he doesn't have what it takes to go against Jalen Ramsey.
Well, I wish that Russell's ball didn't get tipped in this last game, because DK actually put Jalen on skates one time.
Yeah.
That would have been a big completion for about 20 yards at least, and I would have loved to have seen that happen. But I am hopeful as well that DK can make that happen versus Jalen as well. I'm looking forward to that. But the other thing is that it doesn't matter. Look, whether it's DK catching against Jalen Ramsey or he's just catching the ball in general, you got to find ways to get him the ball and to be able to attack this defense in what they present. And when it comes to the Rams talking trash, Stacey, at this stage, look, their defense is for real. And that's where you hear it from. You hear it from Aaron Donald. You hear it from John Johnson. You hear it from Jalen Ramsey. But overall, to me, talk is cheap at this point. And I think that this Seahawks team, you know, hearing that kind of conversation, hearing those sound bites, seeing that bulletin board material, it gives you a little extra something. It gives you a little extra motivation. And when you talk about facing them for the third time, I actually believe that when it comes to this Seahawks team, I think it gives them more of the advantage than it does the other way around. I truly believe that. And you know, I am very anxious for Saturday. I'll just tell you that.
What happened to the deep ball? Why haven't they been able to get DK involved more? Because that's where he was so great earlier this year. He's great at a lot of other stuff. I'm going to get back to my bulletin board material in a minute that I want to make sure to give DK Metcalf. But where has the deep ball, that deep pass to Metcalf, gone? How have defenses taken that away? And how have the Rams done that?
Well, the Rams have been able to do it. I mean, you got to give credit to where credit's due. I mean, Jalen Ramsey has been exceptional this season, and he has been able to really take that away from the likes of DeAndre Hopkins and DK Metcalf, for that matter. And also, you don't get the opportunities as much because quarterbacks are not going to take as many chances as they would against other corners in this league. But I do think that DK, as Troy Aikman has said, and guess what, Stacey? He will say it again in this matchup. They
Man,
will be calling this
bad
game for the third time. Yes, I do, because he drives me absolutely nuts. You know who might drive me more nuts, though?
Who?
You know who might drive me more nuts, and I never want to hear him call another Seahawks game, is Jonathan Vilma.
Oh, I should have answered because I thought that's what he would say.
Absolutely brutal. I mean, super nice guy. But my goodness, he was bad. That was a tough listen. But I guarantee you, Troy Aikman will talk about Deion Sanders and Michael Irvin again, and how you're gonna need to give him chances. And I agree, you do need to give him chances and opportunities, even against a great corner like Jalen Ramsey. And one of the reasons, Stacey, to come back to that question, that they've been able to effectively take away DK away, is you have seen defenses shift into either making sure that they have a safety over the top of DK, or they have just played really soft, too deep coverage, meaning that there's cover four, there's cover two, and sometimes safeties can get aggressive and play up and bite on things in front of them, which allows you to get over the top of them. Defenses have been very, very strict in understanding that, look, you cannot give up a one-on-one opportunity to DK Metcalf because he's going to make you pay. And so I think that has been the shift and the change. And quite honestly, Stacey, you know, when it comes to playoff football, you're not going to get a whole lot of those chances. It's going to be maybe four deep shots in a given game, and can you hit those? Can you capitalize on those? And I think that's really what it comes down to. It's not a surprise to me that those have lessened, but I would, like everybody else, like to see them connect on one or two of those deep balls, because it just opens this entire offense up.
Now you say that, but Jake, you know what I think?
What's that?
I think maybe DK has too little a body fat percentage to beat Jalen Ramsey.
Okay, all right.
I think now, that,
yeah, now you're just trying to...
No, I think that people underestimate the importance of a high body fat percentage. I think DK just doesn't have it. I mean, you know, maybe if he wasn't at -7 body fat, like, he'd be able to...
Ever hear of donuts, DK?
Hey, DK, maybe if you tried a sandwich, you could beat Jalen Ramsey for once. I'm scared. I'm trying to give bulletin board material.
There's knocking on our door.
What's
happening?
The phone rings again.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe this is tied to his inability to shoot. I don't know. Maybe this is somehow related.
It could be. It very well could be. I don't think that is the case, but I won't throw out any possibilities. But I do believe that when it comes to this matchup, it's not going to matter about the deep shot. It's what it's always come back to, Stacey.
Yeah.
It's come back to third downs. It's come back to execution on third downs. And can this group be effective on third downs to keep themselves on the field, to be able to continue to march down the field, to be able to open up your playbook and get to everything that you want to get to? That's such a huge aspect of this game. And if you can control time of possession and you can march down the field on these guys, which is hard to do, I think that would be, to me, the more exciting thing than it would necessarily my need to get a deep ball play in, the explosive play in. If they could consistently march the ball up and down the field, that would be extremely impressive.
Look,
to me,
Jake, that's fantastic insight, and it's good that we know that going into it, and I can't wait to have the conversation about it should that happen post game. All I'm gonna say is, if DK has a great game, I am solely blaming my own bulletin board material that I gave him, but I personally don't think a Sagittarius could have a great game against Jalen Ramsey. So just getting one last one in there. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Do not go anywhere. The huddle starts now. I see Dave Wyman about to walk in. He'll join us for a preview. Hi, Dave, of this upcoming wild card matchup against the Rams. We'll have a Seahawks player. We'll have an opponent preview with an ESPN reporter for the Rams. That all starts next.